It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Sure glad I got out and enjoyed that 10 minutes of 70-degree weather yesterday.
Yes.
Boom, it's gone.
Yeah, it's not just gone. You heard what Demetrius Ivory said. You heard what that poor man. You know, Skilling, I think that Skilling is somehow... It's like a hazing thing that he's doing to Demetrius, right?
Sure.
The, you know, Demetrius being the heir apparent.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, I'm going to show you whenever all hell's breaking loose. And this is not the time. This is the middle.
I mean, middle.
As Violetta would say, the middle of April.
Right. Drop the consonants.
Right. This is the deal. It should be spring now. It shouldn't be snowing and crazy and all that. No.
And then they shouldn't tease us with like thoughts that it might be warm on Friday. And then as you get closer, it's not warm at all.
No.
We all know April's tease.
It is.
And what did we learn yesterday?
Nobody likes a tease.
Right. That's what we learned. Thank you very much.
The girls answering in unison is concerning.
Right. Somebody got told that in 10th grade. And that was it. And it was like, oh, come on.
She's a tease, man. She just lead me on.
Yeah.
All right, let me tell you what's coming up on the program. Michael Steele's going to join us in just a few minutes. We don't even know where to begin. I would start with what the headline is. There are so many. I don't know where to begin.
There are.
We'll do that. Susie Sunshine will tell us about how the markets have been battered about by all of this stuff, whether it's the politics or the trade, the rumors or the winds of a trade war, all of that. So we will... We'll get you caught up and how to protect yourself in that. And Mark McKinnon returns to this program at 4 o'clock. Mark McKinnon is the guy from The Circus.
We like him. Yeah.
That great show on Showtime that ran during the election, and then it did a little season last year. It's doing a season this year. And whoa, what a circus it is. And then this is interesting. Our friend Mike Flannery from Fox 32 is going to be here. Mm-hmm. He has a story. He had a sit down with Peter Roskam. Now, this is interesting. Peter Roskam, Republican congressman, and he's in the northwest and western suburbs is his district.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a lot of Chicago area Republicans who are a little conflicted. A lot of business folks out there. A lot of people who are, they've been voting for Republicans most or of all their lives. And they're just because it's not sure what to do with Donald Trump. It's a tough time,
it is.
I think, for people, especially people who come from this part of the world that are used to, crooked politicians, lying politicians, wacky politicians.
Mm-hmm.
That we kind of been able to sniff some things out here. Over the years, and then also to get bamboozled by guys who you didn't think for a second it was going to be like that.
Right. So how do you handle that as a politician, I guess, is a great question. There must be some constituents who are very in Trump's corner, and there must be quite a few Republicans who are not.
Yes, and we have there's a jaundiced eye here in Illinois, especially when it comes to, there was Henry Hyde, right? And they were like, remember Henry Hyde because he had an affair or something? I'm like, that guy had an affair?
That was the most surprising part.
Right. So now, here we find ourselves in this really weird space with Donald Trump. And how does a guy who has been a very conservative Republican, economically conservative Republican, how does he deal with this in his reelection? So Mike Flannery has sit down with him. It's very interesting. And then at 5 o'clock, all hell breaks loose because we got a top five at five.
Yeah.
We have. The Carnival Wagon.
The Stefani restaurants. Oh, how cool.
And
I saw that.
Richard Roper is going to tell us about what he says is the best movie of the year so far.
Ooh.
We didn't get to it in his reviews yesterday because his reviews were the big movies coming out. This is a smaller movie, but it says the best movie of the year so far.
Ooh.
So we'll tell you all about that. But right now, let's check in with Kim Gordon, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom.
If members of the FBI are leaking classified information, the president should absolutely call that to question. You guys spend hours upon hours every single day praising Jim Comey, propping him up, giving him the biggest platform. We shouldn't be praising him. We should be putting him down. We should be taking him off of air instead of giving him minute after minute. This country has a lot of real problems.
Thank you, Sarah, for the suggestion. We'll take it under advisement.
Right.
He's the former FBI director who's telling us, I like how the White House is telling us, you should take him off the air and put him down, media. You work for us now.
This is what you should be doing.
Oh, Michael Steele. Oh, Michael. Remember, Michael, I just want to take you back. I want to take you back. You know, you and I have known each other a long time, but let's go back to the summer of 2016. And let's go to the streets of Cleveland, Ohio. We're walking down there. There was that lovely like restaurant and bar street that led into the arena.
Beautiful.
Yeah. The little narrow arena.
With little coffee shops and things like that. It's so pretty.
We had been, and we had, all of us had just landed in Cleveland to cover the convention, and you and I had not talked to each other yet, and we're walking down the street, and I see you, because you're a tall drink of water. Like Comey. Yeah.
Hard to miss.
And so I see you, and then you rush through the crowd, you hug me, and go, it's all going to be okay. Right? You remember that moment?
That seems like something Michael would do.
Yeah.
Were you lying to him then?
Yeah, you're all right.
Lying
so
to him now.
I just want, I just want confirmation. You remember that moment, right?
Yes.
All right. Were you right or wrong?
I was clearly wrong.
Okay, fine. That's what I want to know. All right, let's talk about this. Comey, now this is so so interesting that depending on what you're watching, what news you're consuming, either Comey, as a matter of fact, Fox News is running on their website right now, Sunday, the trial of James Comey, their special. And you know, then you've got I don't know how MSNBC has been covering this, but you know, you got CNN doing a whole thing about how, you know, an amazing takedown of Donald Trump, James Comey speaks and that. I mean, and the thing is that somewhere, and not quite in the middle, I think it kind of leans a little bit to the, you know, toward that, you know, Comey was a career guy who, you know, got caught in this moment of American politics where, the people just, you know, the Clintons never really thought much about the rules, as you might recall, right? They kind of want, they were freelancers when it came to that. They want to do things their way. The Trumps clearly, that the Trump people are definitely in the same vein, just, you know, in a different, with a different political bent. But it's all about populism and, you know, we're, the personalities are bigger than the country and all of that. And so these two titanic forces of disintegration clashed. Mm-hmm. And the FBI didn't know exactly what to do with it. And now you've got the FBI, you know, kind of going back and forth on Hillary and going back and forth on Trump because they don't want to get in the way. They don't want to get in the way of American politics. And this is what, this is how America thanks them for their service.
Well, a couple of things. I found it ironic and somewhat humorous and typical when the president tweeted out that James Comey was a slime ball. And I was like, that's a lot like that pot calling the kettle black. But let's set that aside for a moment. The fact is that this is a full-scale war, at this political war at this point. They know when this book drops next week, Comey is going to tell us exactly what happened in those meetings. And he's going to, and this is the problem for the White House. And this is why I would not be surprised to find out that an advanced copy of this book was given to the FBI months ago. Mm-hmm. because here's the deal. Comey can now tell us something that doesn't come across in a public hearing, and that is the subtleties of a conversation and engagement with the President of the United States. As I was sitting there, the president leaned into me from across the desk and looked me in the eye and said, all right, which that body language alone tells you it was an intimidating move. It's a move that's sort of at the director saying, you're going to do this, so I need you to do this. And so all of a sudden now, everything takes on a very different color and hue, because not only do we have the words of what happened, the, you know, a telling of the events, but we have context and we have, you know, the environment, the atmosphere of what was going on in each of those encounters. So it paints a picture of the president that up till now we have not seen from any other public official. And that's why this White House has gone into full scale meltdown over this book. Because at the end of the day, it's a book by a former FBI director. What yes. could he possibly say, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, there's a lot he can say.
There's a lot.
Contemporaneous notes. And not only did he take contemporaneous notes, he then had a contemporaneous conversation with another FBI, member of the FBI, who also took contemporaneous notes of that conversation.
Right.
It's troubling. So,
he might have just been fired himself.
I wonder in the grand scheme of things, though, Michael, if that's the thing most troubling to him, or if this Michael Cohen thing is first on his nightmare scenario when he wakes up thinking, okay, look, he's now under criminal investigation and apparently kept recordings of a lot of conversations he had.
Yeah, baby, this is it. Oh, this is going to get fun. Yeah, because New York is a one-party state when it comes to this. So you don't need, like in Maryland and D.C.
and Illinois.
If I wanted to record a conversation, I have to get your permission before I record it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if I record, I'm the one who's in trouble legally. In New York, you don't need that. So this guy apparently recorded these conversations, then would play them back to folks bragging about how he either manhandled the situation or got this point or did that. But now the FBI seized all of that. And you know, because of his position and ego with Trump, that he recorded some of those conversations about how he handled the Stormy Daniels matter, some of these other NDAs. Mm-hmm. Etc.
So there was DNA before there was NDA, but I know what you mean.
They go hand in hand in some cases.
Yeah.
This is very true. But now Trump is sitting there going, they've got that. And what really ticks him off was the special prosecutor has now gone to a space where Donald Trump said he was not allowed to go, and that's into his personal finances and his personal business. And everything has kind of moved into that track. And so this is why the president is apoplectic right now. You've read the reports and heard the stories about the president losing his temper on the heels of this raid. This is bad. This is damaging, serious. Look for Rod Rosenstein to be fired. Mm-hmm. He's got to get him out of there so that he can get someone in there to shut this thing down. And the minute he does, I'm just telling you, my bet, my guess, it doesn't matter if Republicans do anything or not. This presidency would effectively end at that moment because there will be the chance of reelection would be zero. And what happens this November is the Republic will go to the polls and clean out Republicans in the House and the Senate to put a watchdog over the president for the next 2 years.
You know, one of the interesting things that's coming out in the Comey book is the guy that replaced you at the Republican National Committee, Reince Priebus, comes off not well. In the excerpts that have been released so far, in terms of when they had their first meeting before he was actually sworn in as president, it was in early January at the Trump Tower. He's meeting with a national security package, and Comey is part of it, and James Clapper is part of it. And they're sitting there telling him about how the United States has been attacked by Russia in this with a war, an internet war. Doesn't appear that there had been any votes that had actually been changed at the state level. That's an important point, that they didn't get to the voting machines, but that didn't start, but they did try, and that's come out since.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They did try, but they weren't able to get into that, but they were able to, get into the social bloodstream and they were taking over and pretending to be a bunch of different people who they weren't. So they were explaining this to them. And so what Reince Priebus did was he, instead of them then asking the question, they being the Trump folks, asking the question, okay, what are we going to do to protect ourselves here? They're like, okay, how are we going to spin this so people understand that they didn't change the election results? And it took Comey back. It took James Clapper back, who's now commented on it, saying that that's exactly how he recalls the meeting as well, and he was surprised by it. And so you do have this moment. But I'm going to go back to this James Comey thing for just a second. It's so amazing to me. Mm-hmm. We have to stop and we have to think, this is an FBI director who is now being called basically a criminal.
Yeah,
by the White House.
Right.
And he's been fired and he's being called a criminal. He's being sidelined. They're doing everything they can to dirty him up. This is, you just have to stop and you have to think about this. And all the times we stop, we try to pinch ourselves and go, is this really happening? This is one of the scariest moments of this because you're taking the FBI, which, It has been, it's a long and storied institution. There have been things, you know, in the J. Edgar Hoover era that, you know, that they're not very proud of. But basically in the post-Watergate era, for the last 45 years, the FBI is considered the gold standard of law enforcement in America. And the fact that they're looking at all of the crazy stuff that Donald Trump and Michael Cohen and all the rest of the stuff that he was doing in this, it's an act of happenstance that Donald Trump essentially became president of the United States, because he was tough. He found the right moment. He found the right message. And he was tougher than the rest of the guys around him. And he won even against his own. He didn't think for a second he was going to win. And yet he did. Right. But at the end of the day, he still came from what appears to be a pretty corrupted, corruptible or corrupt, depending on how you want to look at it, background as a real estate developer in New York. There's a lot of there. And he brought that with him. And God knows. And that's why everybody's looking at the Russian thing, because they're like, he could have either by accident or by being a willing accomplice, it's unclear, have allowed the Russians to do what they did. And that's why people have to look at this.
Well, here is my bottom line on this moment in time with the special prosecutor and the muddying up, the tearing down of James Comey. Fortunately, the polls right now are with Comey and with the special prosecutor, Mueller, by significant amount, you know, 52 plus.
Yeah, but that's close. It was 62 a couple weeks ago.
Well, no, and it's still in that. I mean, I was just referring to one poll, but it's still pretty high. I mean, it's the latest polls that we have over at NBC has a number somewhere around 58. Right. So it's a good solid number of support for the special prosecutor. But here's the bottom line: if the president is successful in his efforts to trash and tear down Comey, and with firing the special prosecutor, it is the end of what we know of rule of law in this country. And you will watch going forward all of the president's political enemies fall within those buckets, and they will be taken out systematically by Fox News and by the White House spokeswoman standing at that podium every single day. And it will be the end of the rule of law in this country as we know it. It will be the end of journalistic standards that should matter. And it will be the end of sort of protecting, which my party once did, you know, those men and women who give their lives in public service, FBI,
CIA,
Department, CIA, et cetera. All that goes away.
Yeah.
So this is a seminal moment.
It is.
Feels like it.
And it's the end of the United States of America as we knew it. The bright shining city on the hill. And that's that. And you know, you're a Republican.
Well,
I have voted for more Republicans than I have Democrats, and I can tell you this is as scary a moment as I have ever seen. Although I'm from Chicago, you got to vote for Democrats if you want to get your garbage taken away.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Talking about that bright shining light on the hill, you know, this administration has done everything they can to pee on it. So,
all right.
Oh, reference.
Oh, I see. You got that right out of the dossier. All right. Thank you, Michael Steele. We'll talk to you next
week. Thanks, Michael. Have a good weekend.
All right. I'm just trying to make
leaving us with that.
Let's have a laugh. Oh, God. All right. thank you. We've got the news coming your way in 2 minutes right here.
Just wanted to be clear.
Yeah. You were. Don't worry about it. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis here on 720 WGN. There she is, Susan Schmidt from Westwood in Dallas, but she's here in Chicago today.
Nice to see you in person.
Why, thank you. Yeah. Nice to be here.
This is an interesting week, I think. I don't know. You think. Volatility. Let's just talk about volatility. Let's help some people out there who are listening to this. If the winds of whether it's the winds of a trade war, or the sniff that there might be the United States having more troops on the ground in the Middle East, all these kinds of things do have a tendency to depress markets. And yet the market keeps thrashing back and forth, you know, a percentage or 2% a day, which it's a significant enough number, isn't it?
It does matter. So we're seeing a period of time now where the markets are actually paying attention to some of these sound bites coming out of Washington. And over the last 12 months, the markets have really ignored the noise in Washington and focused on business, the underlying earnings, what companies are saying. And
we're waiting on the tax cut, right?
Waiting on the tax cut. And everything that we heard, all the sound bites, were really positive for the first, you know, 12, 14 months of this administration. Mm-hmm. And now we're starting to see that shift. We're getting a little bit of the negative with it too, and the market is starting to tune in. And that's the problem. So we're getting a lot of volatility. It really started to focus the market when trade wars and that soundbite started coming out. Mm-hmm. That's not a good thing. That continues to be a concern for the market. No one really understands where we are with that, what's going to happen, what was the messaging back from China, how's that dialogue going? So that's a concern. Syria continues to be something looming out there. You've seen the price of oil go up. A lot of that is because there's concern over what's happening in the Middle East, what could happen. Generally, that any sort of idea of political instability over there bumps up the price of oil. We're seeing that. And then the Mueller investigation isn't going away. That's another.
Oh, it's going away.
That's another.
somebody's going.
Trust me, it's going away.
Floats in and out of, you know, market perception and focus. And so we've got all these things that are coming in from the outside, impacting the markets. We've also had a little bit of a lull because we just finished third quarter. Mm-hmm. So companies have been getting their accounting in order, and now we're just about to hit earnings. So today we had three big banks report. We've got another one reporting on Monday. We're kicking off earnings season. Management teams are out. This is when the market can focus back on businesses and fundamentals, and hopefully that's where the market focus will be, and that's going to be
earnings.
Earnings. How profitable are these businesses? Mm-hmm. This is when managements can start to say, hey, we've gone through it now. We understand what this tax cut is going to do for us.
This is exactly what Larry Kudlow said.
And here's how the benefit flows through. And this is what the business is going to benefit from. Here's what our shareholders are going to benefit from. If the market focuses back on that, then we should see stability return.
Hey, by the way, I'd like to congratulate Larry Kudlow. His 13th day in office.
Oh, he beat Scaramucci.
He beat Scaramucci by 2 days. He said that was that's the one thing. I'm not kidding here. That's what he said. So one thing he wanted to do is make sure that he didn't set the record for shortest serving member of the President's Advisory Council. And to me, Kudlow's an interesting cat because he's clearly been brought in because he's great on television, right? I mean, he's famously great on television. That's where he came from, right? After mm-hmm. sort of having an interesting career on the other side of the glass. If you go back and you look at, you know, what his actual work was like when he was actually in the world, the finance world, it was a little different. But he's great. He's great on TV, and he's walking around, you know, out. He likes to take a walk on the lawn of the White House.
In his great suits.
Right. If I were him, I'd be doing the same thing. And he walks with the press, and then he has a little bit of fun with them.
Well, he knows so many of them personally, too.
Right. They're all his friends. Mm-hmm. I've over the years had a lot of different contacts with him, and he's great. He's a lovely guy, fun, interesting, very smart guy. But he's not there because he's an economist, because he's really not.
He's not an economist.
He's there because he's great on television, and he's going to just say he's going to go and spin, even though he personally disagrees with it. And again, not an economist, but as a talking head on television, he disagreed with tariffs. He disagreed with a lot of the things that the president is doing. Yeah. You know, the explosion. There was a report this week. This had to take everybody aback. There was a report this week about the debt impact of this tax bill. Why?
It could be large.
And very large.
Very large. And I think one of the bets that we're making here is that we're going to stimulate growth. Mm-hmm. This tax cut will, so we're decreasing our revenues to the government by lowering taxes, but we're stimulating the economy and promoting growth because of those lower taxes, and we're making us a better base for business. So we should be attracting more manufacturing onto the U.S. shores versus are going overseas, offshoring everything, right? We're trying to reverse that trend. We're making ourselves competitive on a global scale. We had previous to this, one of the highest tax rates globally.
Right.
So mm-hmm. this makes us competitive with products from other countries. And I think that's very important. The bet is that we're going to get enough growth from that that it is going to offset the decline in revenues that might be generated. And it really is, how much do you predict the economy
What's
growing?
The number that America, you think, needs to hit here? I mean, 3% is what the president was always saying.
I don't think you can put a number on it. I think 3% is out there. It's 3% should be doable because we've been running
it. Hit it this year.
We're probably going to hit it. You know, we've been running at 2%. That's with higher taxes than what we have now. You've got sequestration is over. We forgot about this, but we tapped back on government spend a few years ago, and we held that in place for a couple of years, and now that's gone. So we're back to normal spending patterns from the government, so that helps boost things a little bit. And we've got pretty high consumer confidence. We're seeing consumer savings starting to fall a little bit because they're feeling better about their balance sheet, and consumers are out spending again. So all of these things are positive, and I think, you know, we just need to see a number that's that 2 to 3%. 3% would be great. We should be able to hit that. And I think people are very careful about putting a distinct number out there. At the end of the day, it goes back to a number that we saw today that came out, the Consumer Confidence Index. So we want people to feel good about the economy. And when they feel good about the economy, they spend and everything flows along. Mm-hmm. And that has worked well for us. So we don't need to have, you know, I don't need to see 7% growth and the GDP skyrocket. That's actually bad. We had the Fed minutes come out this week. They're, I think, taking a very realistic approach to what's going on. We're watching. It's
concerned
slow,
about
steady.
Inflation.
Right. Yeah. So we're not seeing it. Slow, steady growth. That's the way to win here.
We asked you about the trade wars and its impact. What about this war with Amazon and the way the president does lash out at corporations and names them specifically? Now he launched an executive order to do a full review of the post office, saying that they give Amazon sweetheart deals. Talk about the impact that kind of thing has. I mean, is this...
So, this is all, again, new language, a new way to dialogue with corporations. Clearly, the president has some issues with the way Amazon does business. He's picking on them right now. But remember that when he started out, we started with tweets about Boeing. And we started with tweets about Toyota. And we haven't seen any big changes. Boeing's doing great. So we're seeing a different way to dialogue with companies and try to attract attention to it. I think what we did see was, you know, that Amazon string of tweets. We had Mark Zuckerberg for Facebook in front of Congress this week. And we've then seen an outflow of funds from technology sector. So that outflow of funds, we've seen the technology stocks come down. Not unusual. They were one of the highest performing sectors for the last year. Mm-hmm. So seeing that, we're seeing a little bit of a rotation out of the tech stocks. And yet, those businesses continue to function and be fine. I think we're going to be educated on how, this new dialogue and how that progresses.
Well, I think you make an excellent point, because what the president does is he goes out and he says all these outrageous things. And Boeing was a great example
This.
Because what they did is he goes, the Air Force One, $3.2 billion, that's too much. So Boeing, terrible, terrible, terrible. We're going to take the contract and go somewhere else, which of course they can't, because Boeing is the only American company that could do that. So they were like, we're gonna have the Russians build our planes for us or something, Then Boeing comes back and they charge you $3.1 billion for it, and the president goes, look at this!
I saved money.
I got $100 million back, and that's kind of what he does.
At the same time, just as a follow-on to that, it's the domino effect here. So we also, at the same time, Boeing was about to make a big sale to Iran. They wanted to get that approved, and so they were very quiet and careful in how they responded to the president. But lo and behold, with all our tough talk about what we're going to do with Iran, we didn't do anything different with Iran. Those policies haven't changed. Boeing did get their sale through. So we're seeing a little bit new format on the dialogue.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Susan Schmidt, thank you very much. Susie Sunshine, as we call her around here. Although Cisco Coto at BBM doesn't like it when we do it. Susan Schmidt is here, and thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Susan. Good to see you guys.
Kim Gordon's in the newsroom. What's coming up at the top of the hour? That is a theme to Showtime's The Circus, to my eye and ear, the best half hour of television produced about this entire mess that we now live in over the last, it's going on 3 years now.
If you wondered if the circus name would hold, I don't think you're worried about that now, right? During the election, it seemed like, yeah, it works. Now it still works.
Mark McKinnon is one of the founders of the circus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's the Barnum or the Bailey or the, I don't know which one he is, but he's one of them. And he joins us right now. And I guess, did you have a sense as you were covering this and we were all kind of, you know, talking to each other during the run up in 2016? And then Donald Trump became president and you guys did another shorter season after that. Did you anticipate that it was going to continue to be this level of material, for lack of a better term?
No, and nobody did. And that's, you know, the frustrating part of our show is that every time we go off the air, you know, people who watch the show scream at us because there's so much going on. It's like, why are you going off the air? But if the threshold to be on was that something interesting, newsworthy, surprising was happening, we'd never go off the air. And unfortunately, we've got a budget.
Mm-hmm. Well, you even look at what happened. Look at what happened today in the news. It's hard to, you know, you could fill more than a half an hour with just the movements in the political world today alone. I know you get 7 days beginning to end to sum up the most interesting things, and you give it great insight and make it entertaining. And it just seems like a tough job to try to figure out what should make the cut.
Well, it is. And when we first started the show, they said they gave us 26 episodes, which is a lot of TV. That's two seasons for most shows. And my first instinct was, gosh, there's just going to be weeks where not a lot's going to be happening.
Oh, God.
For the whole show. Yeah. That never happened. Never once.
Yeah. Never, ever.
It's always, it's just like you said, I've just got off a conference call, but we've got like, you know, an hour and a half too much material, and there's still stuff breaking today.
Mm. Yeah. How are you going to get it all crammed in for Sunday? And what it is this show actually takes you in the week that was, essentially, and takes you through what has just happened. And in startling detail, because you give us angles, both visual angles and narrative angles, that are not in the mainstream news at that point. I mean, you're getting backstage access to things that are pretty interesting. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure if you can talk about this, but we talked about it at the moment that it happened when you were on the show in the fall of 2016. Your episode called From Russia with Love, which I think probably exists somewhere on the Showtime website, people can see.
It does, yeah.
You had a John Heilemann had an interview with Crazy Roger Stone, and I just use that term because I think that's his own expression for himself now. Crazy Roger Stone at the Russian Tea Room on 57th Street in Midtown Manhattan, in which he basically acknowledged to your cameras that he's had a lot of contact with the people over there about what's going on over here. And I was astounded. We talked about it that week. Like, what is he admitting to here? And then Donald Trump wins. This was about 3 weeks before the election, 4 weeks before the election. And now I would imagine that all of your raw video is probably in the possession of the federal government somewhere.
I would think so.
Well, remember that the one line that Roger Stone said from that episode, which was so chilling, when he turned to John and said, "The election's over when we say it's over." And
yes.
And you know, now he's under the gun of the feds for having, you know, some alleged communication directly with WikiLeaks, and that's what that whole show was about that week.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you know, we heard later that WikiLeaks hacked Showtime to get the show before it actually aired. So
wow.
And by the way, I don't know if you knew this or not, but that episode that you're talking about, which I love that episode because that's when we had that great scene in London stalking Julian Assange,
right.
Yeah. And talked a lot about WikiLeaks. But the reason we were there is that we were trying to go to Moscow. We wanted to go to Russia, but they wouldn't give us visas, which was kind of interesting in itself. But we didn't get them, so we went to London. That's why we were in London. But because we had more time, and it's later now, we got them, and that's where the show, that's where we shot this week. We were in Moscow, St. Petersburg, London, and D.C.
And
think about all the news this week that was connected to Russia and how just coincidentally lucky we were that that's where we were.
And you interviewed the editor of RT, the Russian state media, and I saw a little bit of a clip about it. And this is the woman who was named in intelligence reports as being one of the many names in Russian meddling in the U.S. election. And from what she denied everything.
Yeah, well, of course she did, and as all good propagandists do. Not only was she named, she was named 27 times. She's the tip of the propaganda spear. You remember Baghdad Bob? This is mm-hmm. Moscow Margarita.
We'll work on that. I'll email you. I got a better name.
Better
for
one.
It. Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you a question though about this at the end of the day, because you know your background is so interesting in this that you were with the George W. Bush White House and the campaign, and you know I want to take you back to the late 1990s. And Bill Clinton was creating chaos, right, with the whole Monica Lewinsky situation, and they were threatening that, you know, this is a special prosecutor that's out of control and run amok, and then there was an impeachment and all of this. And yet, because the economy was going well in that time, Al Gore, despite the Clinton fatigue that everyone talked about at the time, Al Gore still won the popular vote and just missed on the Electoral College in a reverse of what, not a reverse, but, you know, mm-hmm. similar to what happened here in 2016. So I wonder, at the end of the day, do you think, because you spend a lot of time, you know, out in real America, as they like to call it, although they spell that with a K, which really freaks me out, that in real America, that all of this parlor game stuff doesn't really count, and that Republicans are going to do better in the fall than a lot of people on the coasts believe are going to happen, and that Donald Trump could win again in 2020 regardless of what happens here?
Well, I think it's possible for this reason. I think that the Democrats are very likely to nominate a fairly left-leaning nominee. That's just where the physics of the Democratic Party are going. I think that Donald Trump, if he runs for re-election, I think it's highly likely he will, you know, absent some intervening legal event or something, that it's just his psyche to not want to go out humiliated or not a winner. So he'll want to run for re-election, and he will do well in the Republican primaries. I don't think anybody will beat him in the Republican primaries. He still has a very strong, faithful base. So he'll win the Republican primaries. But what that means is that an establishment Republican, or a number of them, like John Kasich or Bob Corker, Jeff Flake, I can name 10 people who kind of fit the description, would want to do it. They'll run as an independent. And they could even do a dream ticket where they have, like, Republican at the top of the ticket, Democrat at the bottom of the ticket. And under that scenario, I think you've got a 30-30-30 outcome that could get pretty interesting.
Wow. Mm. Wow. Yeah, yeah. Because the math on that isn't that the American political system doesn't really set up for that. I love the idea that there was talk of this back in 2016, in the summer of 2016. There was a group of people, they were the Romney folks. It wasn't going to be Romney, but a lot of the people who are around Mitt Romney wanted to do exactly that. They wanted to build this dream team, and they were looking for presidential and vice presidential candidates along the way. I didn't get the call, but I knew a few people who did. And so I thought that was an interesting moment then, but now, given everything else that has gone on, that's a fascinating scenario. That's news today. All right, let's talk about this week. So we were walking in here today at 3 o'clock, and we were talking to the producers and thinking, now what do we start with? Because there's so much. And the Michael Cohen thing, how big do you think that is?
I think that's really big, and that's why I think that everybody's on pins and needles about Trump actually taking some action and either firing Sessions or Rosenstein or both of them. Because, think about it. Who knows more about everything about you other than your personal attorney, right? And that kind of made the hair on the back of my neck stand up just when I heard about it. So I can only imagine what it did to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And you just know that there's going to be some bad stuff there. And I think that's so there was a subsequent reaction from Trump, which, under those circumstances, didn't surprise me, because I think that's, I think there's a lot of stuff there he doesn't want people to know about, and and that's where they're headed.
Well, and he might be able to get protection from that. It would be my guess that judges are probably going to give him if it's not germane to a criminal conspiracy, and they're going to have to make the argument that it's not germane to a criminal conspiracy, because I think almost every real estate transaction in New York is a criminal conspiracy on one level or another. So you got a problem there. Go ahead.
But here's why this is not just significant, but I think problematic on a much deeper, broader level than just some real estate transactions, because this was done. Donald Trump didn't like the federal prosecutor for the District of New York after he became president, because he was an Obama appointee, Preet Bharara. So Trump fired him, and then Trump replaced him with one of Trump's guys. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the Justice Department didn't take action itself. It referred this action to that Trump judge, and it was that Trump judge, not the Trump prosecutor.
Yeah,
and he took that action. So, in order for him to take that action, it had to be really serious.
Well, okay, but there's some color in that, though. There's been reporting this week that the guy who was the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, who you're referring to as Trump's guy, he recused himself from actually getting in the will of, so in the middle of this. So the guy below him was the one that okayed all of this and then went to the judge and had his team go to the judge to get the appropriate warrants. But your point is an excellent one, that the special prosecutor, his office didn't do this. And what they call Big Justice, the Department of Justice in Washington, mm-hmm. didn't do this. They left it out to they left it to one of their field offices, which means that you do still have these people. I mean, this is just an amazing moment, Mark. I mean, you've been in and around, you know, government for decades. We have a moment where the former FBI director has written a tell-all book, which to me is a cry in the night. He is saying, listen, I'm willing to risk my credibility. I'm willing to risk my career. I'm willing to risk my future career. And I'm willing potentially even to risk some sort of criminal prosecution for doing this. But you need to know what I know, because it is not the way America should operate. That's what I'm seeing here.
There's no historical precedent for what we're seeing, and you know, that's why there's so much interest in our TV show.
Yes.
Right. I mean,
you know, if it were President Clinton, there wouldn't have been a season two or a season three. You know, it is fascinating, and you know, we're all trying to make sense of it. You know, because it's not like anything any of us has seen, and we're just trying to take it a week at a time and try and figure it out.
Mark, quickly, can you weigh in about the pardoning of Scooter Libby? It seemed to come out of the blue, but you know, he'd already been commuted his sentence by someone you know well, former President George W. Bush. Now, the pardon comes through. Is he telegraphing in some way, hey, you know, look, you get this, you know, something about the Justice Department and perjury charges that I would stand up for you? What is the president doing here?
Well, the timing is just odd, and so that's why people would understandably draw that conclusion. I've never heard Donald Trump or anybody around him talk about Scooter Libby or the injustices to Scooter Libby. I mean, that was not talked about on the campaign. It's not talked about since they've been president. So it came completely out of the blue. So that's what makes you question the timing and the intent. It's like, well, wait a minute. This was never like on the list of to-dos for Donald Trump. So where and why did this come from? So, you know, I remember all this well, just because it was such a point of contention between Bush and Cheney. You know, this really ripped apart their relationship and really did some long-term damage, because Cheney was very upset about it.
Yeah.
And you know, as I said, it had a permanent effect on their relationship.
I don't care what they've said about George Bush over these years. I just don't care. I don't care about the. At this point, I'm willing to forgive the Iraq and all the subsequent things that have happened, just to have a week, just for a week, just to have a week off of this, so we can all go on vacation for a week and then come back Just have him be the president for a week would be fine. I mean, it's like, it is.
I love those billboards of him smiling and just says, miss me yet?
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, we really do. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Good. Congratulations on this.
You guys again. It's good catching up, and always love talking to you.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Mark McKinnon from The Circus, which premieres Sunday night on Showtime. Check your local listings and make sure you have Showtime. I think that's the most important thing.
That's the first thing you
have to check. Worth getting it just for this show. It's amazing. It's the best reduction in 30 minutes of everything you need to know about what happened in the week in Washington, because it's just insane.
And it's well done. Well produced.
Totally entertaining. All right, here we go. We've got Kim Gordon going to tell us what's happening at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom. Broconcho with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Mike Flannery has just stepped in to the studio. He's the political editor of Chicago and maybe the world. I'm not quite sure. That's at least what his Twitter handle is. And I he's at the Fox 32. And tonight at 9:30, you know, you got that fired up show. That everything's fired up.
Flannery fired up.
Flannery fired up.
At least I'm fired up.
Yeah, everything in television has to be alliterative, at least on the local level. It's can't have a show that doesn't have. Oh, people remember it if you say Flannery fired up. I can imagine the focus groups that they had to run that past. Anyway, the point of this is that you sat down with Peter Roskam, and I think he is a very interesting test case here, and one of those congressional districts that is what Democrats are looking to flip and Republicans are hoping to keep.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a really, this is an incredible moment. I mean, today's news alone, the president's attorney is in court. The president sent his own attorneys to court in Manhattan today to try to get a judge to keep all the stuff that was seized from Michael Cohen's office in their possession, in the president's possession, mm-hmm. so that, you know, that's a attorney-client privilege and you can't have that stuff. And and what came out then as a side note, there was Michael Cohen apparently cut a deal for a gigantic Republican fundraiser in California. They did a fundraiser for his girlfriend. He's married, but he had a girlfriend who's a Playboy playmate who got pregnant and had an abortion, and they gave her $1.6 million. Michael Cohen somehow worked out a deal to give her off of a fundraiser, which does not seem like that is a charitable cause right there.
No, it doesn't.
$1.6 million. And then where does this land, close to the president or not? I mean, who knows? But that's and probably not. But the reality is that it's still this. It's all this stuff is starting to come out. If that came out, now that guy had to come out and immediately apologize to his wife. By the way, I'd like to apologize, honey. I was meaning to tell you this. I know it's an awkward way for you to find out, but
very
it was
awkward.
You know
that party we went to with that pretty girl.
The whole thing is just. You know, this is that's a crazy moment. But then on top of it, you have all the other pieces of this. You have the former FBI director writing a tell-all book. You've got the and basically screaming into the night, hey, pay attention to me. I'm risking my reputation, my future career, and maybe even my freedom by doing this. But you need to know what I know about this president.
So Peter Roskam, easily the most vulnerable Republican congressman in Illinois, maybe in the Midwest, a guy whose district Hillary Clinton carried by 7 percentage points, an overwhelmingly traditionally Republican district. He's putting some distance between himself and Donald Trump to a great degree. And in the interview that's going to air tonight at 9:30, here's a soundbite from it if you've got that ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
This is how he's trying to say, hey, I'm not like the Trumpster.
When the president has made mistakes, in my view, I've called him out. When he said he wanted to cut Great Lakes funding by 95%, I said we shouldn't do that. We should restore that money. When racists and anti-Semites and Klansmen found comfort in the president's words following the Charlottesville events, I called him out on that. And so the president's a very mercurial figure, obviously. Now, residents of the 6th District are going to make a decision. Who do they want their voice to be? In a co-equal branch of government, and I think I will be making the case that they should return me to Congress.
So he's obviously not running in a district like in Southwest Pennsylvania, you know, where the president carried that district that Connor Lamb won a few weeks ago in the special election. The president carried that district by 20 points. No, Hillary carried Roskam's district by 7. And if there's been a 10, 12, 14 point shift.
Gee, that's hard to overcome.
So he's swimming upstream.
Who's the Democrat?
It's a guy named Sean Kasten, who's a business guy, an entrepreneur.
Political newcomer, though.
In the green energy space. Mm-hmm. Political newcomer. It's the first time he's run. You know, he may or may not have a learning curve, and that may be to Roskam's advantage too.
Congressman Roskam has was front and center for the tax law, and then he was on the show talking about it. He was pitching it when very few people were on board, when the polls show they didn't like it, and he pretty much owns that. And so I wonder if that plays in his favor, Mike Flannery, or how do you think?
So again, tonight we go over that in great detail. He argues that it's worth it caps the deductions that are used by homeowners. 78% of the homeowners in his district use those deductions related to property taxes, etc. That's going away. He says it's still, though, a good deal. He says it's worth $1 billion for the 6th district, out mostly in DuPage County, a few other precincts in neighboring counties. And he says for the average family in the district, husband, wife, two kids, they make $135,000, the average family like that. He says for them, it's worth $4,000 a year in tax savings.
So maybe
so he's going to campaign on it, but the Democrats are going to hammer him on all those other things.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is in Illinois, we're in a state in which, for all the reasons you just articulated, that tax advantage that Republicans are running on around the country is not as great as it is there. Yeah. Here as it is there.
Here, New York, California, New Jersey, those places, the Democrats are going to use it to beat Republicans on the head.
Yeah, I learned this the hard way from my accountant this week.
You did? Yeah. Did not work out well for you?
No, because he was projecting what I'm going to have to pay next year. And I'm like, where is Guadalajara tax-free? Where do I have to go?
I've got a spot picked out on Lower Wacker Drive.
Oh,
You know, it kind of thins
out.
It's
kind of rough down there right now. Well, I don't know. Sure. I'm a little
worried
about it.
And they have those sounds that scare away all the pigeons that keep coming on, the chirping sounds.
No property tax down there.
Yeah, that's true. Well, not yet. Although, if Tony Preckwinkle finds a way, she'll, you know, there might be a chance. Hey, now, this is Roskam said this, though, because, all right, so he says one thing, hey, the president's wrong about this, 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 and this, right? Especially when it comes to how things affect the Chicago area. But then, is the president good or bad for the country?
I think it's a middling response. I mean, there's some things that have been taxes, regulation, getting Gorsuch on the court, standing up for the United States. Those are positive things. The tweeting, the nonsense, the commenting on facelifts of celebrities and all that sort of stuff is a complete distraction. So an easy answer. I would give him kind of a middling response.
So he's playing.
And this on a week when his Twitter account has included threats of launching missiles, telling the Russians to get ready for the missiles. Here they come.
Right. He threatens a missile launch on Monday, which never comes.
And then Speaker Ryan bails out 48 hours after
that. Wednesday, Speaker Ryan bails out. And then today he uses very colorful language on Twitter to go after the former FBI director. I have a prediction here.
Okay.
Now, this didn't just come from me. I must give credit to Brian Altimer, our producer. Mm-hmm. But I agree with him, and I will articulate his thought.
Okay.
And keep it as my own and claim victory here at the end, that the missiles will launch late Sunday afternoon Chicago time, so that people are not going to be, so that the ABC will be in full network coverage and the Comey interview will not be able to run in its appointed time on Sunday evening on ABC.
That's interesting.
Wagging of the dog.
You and your producer have a diabolical turn of mind.
Yes, we do. But
they may also be right.
Don't you think it's perfect for this time of American history? I mean, it's crazy, right? So
he should have launched a couple missiles when Miss Stormy was on 60 Minutes back a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I should have thought of that. What I think is interesting about one of the things that Comey says in this that I think is fascinating, and I don't know how, and we'll get back to Peter Roskam in just a second, but you know, this the president seems to be fixated on the idea that the salacious rumors about he with ladies of the night and maybe some excretory things occurring in a hotel room in Russia. He's so fixated on proving that that's not true. He goes to a point with Comey, according to Comey, that he says, listen, I need to tell the first lady this didn't happen. If there's a 1% chance, if there's a 1% chance that she believes it, that would be really bad. What does that mean if there's a 1% chance? If there's I think for her, maybe if there's a 1%, it's 1% is 100% with her. She either believes it or she doesn't with him. This isn't like, oh, maybe I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I mean, well, I don't even understand what that response is. I don't know if I don't know what I believe or I don't about this, but that doesn't, to me, all the sexual stuff. And I think for a lot of voters, and I think maybe in Roskam's district and around the country, and I always like to, Olathe, Kansas, I always like to make fun of them for some reason. I don't even know why. But I think they're not going to care about it. They're worried about the jobs, and they're worried, you know, things are going better in the economy as they were in the late 1990s. They didn't care about Bill Clinton's problems there. You know, he gets a pass on a lot of this.
I think that's true for the vast majority of voters, but I do think there's a substantial percentage, because I run into them on the street. They mm-hmm. tend to be middle-aged women. Mm-hmm. They're just grossed out.
Yeah.
Well, he is. I mean, the one that, you know, he is untethered to the truth, I think was the term that was used. I mean, the guy is a fabulist. He makes stuff up. He will just completely fabricate something to say it in front of a crowd.
He's a salesman.
And it's a little bit dangerous, because when he says, no, we're pulling out of Syria. Right. And there's no question that was related. Pulling out of Syria, then Syria drops a chlorine bomb on a neighborhood. Right. In a stronghold for mm-hmm. for Assad's enemies. That's clearly connected. Right. Because it's like, all right, well, they're getting out. They're out of this. I'm going to handle this. Vlad, you and me, we're going to handle this together our way. Right. And because he's not thinking about the strategy of this, he doesn't understand that there is real work that there's a process, and that you've got all these people who know more than you do. Remember when he said he knew more about Iraq than the generals did? Mm-hmm. He really, truly believes that. And it's just so that stuff's crazy, and it's nutty. And I mean, the other stuff, was he involved in shady business deals? Yes. Does he have girlfriends? Yes. Does he have, you know, shady friends? Is Michael Cohen a thuggy lawyer? Yes, 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 yes. But if the economy's going well, I think everybody forgives him.
Yeah, before launching the missiles, too, you got to clear it with people. Like the French actually have mm-hmm. a lot of soldiers over there. They've got a lot of special forces that are going in, and they've got a list of those terrorists involved in the Bataclan attack in Paris, etc. Yeah. You know, they've got some grudges to settle. I mean, you want to tell our allies that have people over there, hey, maybe some missiles are coming. You know, it's not the kind of thing they necessarily
on Twitter. Is that what you want to do?
Checking out Twitter for?
But, Emil, did you see this? Everybody duck. I mean, it's a bad situation. Although, what's interesting, just a little side note here, and the Mike Pompeo, mm-hmm. who is now the CIA director, and he's nominated to be the Secretary of State, and he was up in the Senate at the hearing to become Secretary of State. He dropped something that was interesting. 200 Russians were killed by American-backed forces, including American consultants, or whatever was the term that they use, advisors,
right,
on the ground.
Well, those Russians were attacking. They were attacking our guys.
Right, and 200 of them were killed.
Just wiped out.
But they weren't Russian regular army.
No, they were mercenaries.
Right. Russian citizens who were fighting on behalf.
It's like the little blue men in Ukraine, and the guys in eastern Ukraine are supposedly not regular military
right.
either. You know, Putin likes to use those guys, and whoever the idiot Russian general who ordered that thing, it was completely insane.
But the point is that this may be part of the reason that the president is feeling maybe there's a coolness that has emerged here. And then I start to wonder this. If Vladimir Putin does have something on Donald Trump, how long will it be now?
Well, but would he be embarrassed? Suppose this tape comes out.
That's the thing.
So what?
How does that, it pales in comparison to what we already know.
I think everybody's
made their mind up about this alleged, the young Russian ladies in the hotel room and what they allegedly did. I think everybody's made their, so if that tape actually came out, how much difference would it make at this point?
Yeah, when you have Stormy Daniels and all these other issues out there. It doesn't, I don't know how it shocks.
All right. Well, we'll live to fight another day, maybe. Or maybe not. Michael, we'll see you tonight at 9:30, and then Sunday morning it's a replay.
At 8:30, right.
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 And Flannery fired up.
And the panel discussion, we have a debate on the AR-15 ban up in Deerfield. People up there have until June 13th to get rid of their assault-style weapons or face a fine of up to $1,000 a day. Meanwhile, downstate Effingham on Monday, the county board is preparing to declare Effingham a sanctuary county for gun owners.
Oh.
The state's attorney, Brian Kipler, says they're not going to enforce unconstitutional gun laws.
So that's where the AR-15s will be sold in Effingham County.
And Abrams tanks, too. You can buy one of those down there, too, and park it in your
body armor
carport. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks, Flannery.
We will see you. All right, here right now is Kim telling us what's coming up at the top of the hour. Concho with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. Coming up, top 5 that really you won't believe. I say that in my own version of fabulousness often when I make things up and go, well, you won't believe it, and you probably do, but in this case, I'm going to play some stuff here you're not going to believe.
Quite the eventful day.
And it just happened today. And then we got a Carnarvon wagon rolling. The Stefanis are here to roll out some drinks and some food and tell you about great places that you can eat. And then we got Mr. Richard Roeber going to tell you about the best movie of the year so far. Mm. He did not review it yesterday. He's reviewing it today for us. It is not Rampage, by the way, in case you're wondering.
It's not Rampage.
It's not The Rock and the Monkey. No, this is...
He didn't love Rampage,
no,
as I remember.
He did not. He did like Beirut, though, with John Hamm.
That one sounds good.
So
I like that movie.
We'll see what happens there. What he says, and this is a film that I don't even know what he's going to say here. But I've just been told that's what it's going to be. And live music coming your way in the 6 o'clock hour as well, which is going to be just something. Just something. We got a guy who I cannot pronounce his last name, so good luck to us on this.
The J is silent. Just remember that.
Yeah. And, you know, we're the home of the Blackhawks, so I should be able to
you know those names.
Mispronounce a silent J, but I'm having a little bit of trouble with that. All right. So that is all coming your way right here on the 720, the W and the GN. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Kim Gordon's news being brought to you by AppleChevy.com. It's 5 o'clock. It's a Rokon Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Richard Roeber is with us in the studio. Richard, a little bit later on in the program, in the 6 o'clock hour after the Carnarvon wagon rolls and right before we do live music, Friday is going to tell us about what he thinks is the best movie of the year so far.
Ooh.
Yeah, I really wanted to, you know, we talked about a lot of movies yesterday. We can do a quick recap of Rampage and some of the big movies, but this is a special film. And actually, after I saw this film about, 6 weeks ago, I texted Rokon and the great Ron Majors, the great Rokon and the great Ron Majors.
Right. I mean, that's what you meant to say.
And I said, I just saw a movie that will make both of you weep.
Really?
And I didn't say much more about it other than that, but we'll talk about it. But I'm going to choke up talking about this movie.
Really?
Telling you.
Wow. Oh, that's a compelling like a little tease. But Ro cried at the Barbara Streisand commercial.
Well, yeah.
Concert. Yeah. Ron Majors crying, I think, would be a bigger bar.
I love crying at movies.
I think, quite honestly, Ron is going to be the... I'm going to tell a story out of school here. But Ron is the most likely of all of us to cry.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I wouldn't know that about him.
Yeah, he's a guy that is you know, and when it comes to like heartfelt kinds of things, I mean, he can get
moves him.
He can wear his heart on his sleeve.
Yes.
He bought his breakfast a couple of weeks ago, and he teared up when the donut holes came. Actually,
wait a minute, that's
just good.
Too
so
much.
Good to see you guys.
Oh, sweet. That's something I didn't know about him.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. It's not just donut holes that'll do it too. It's a story of a horse or a story of a. There's a lot of things. Any story that's got like an emotional tug to it, he'll react. Yeah. He connects to.
He's lived a life. He continues to live a real big life, and people that have been through a lot and come out the other side sometimes are
very cool.
Pretty emotional.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
I've lived no life, and I still got emotional. So
all right. Well, it made you cry, and as Whitney Cummings likes to say, you're dead inside.
She said that to me, actually.
then we know for sure that that this is going to be something. So the best movie of the year so far is being released this weekend.
Yes,
it's in the theaters.
Yes,
people going to go find it here.
I hope they do. I think it's an uphill climb, but just
hard to find.
We'll talk
about it coming up.
Okay, cool.
All right. You know what it is time for now, because it is, as I like to say, it is 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5.
Let's go.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, checking in at
number 5.
All right. There's so much going on today. I don't even know where to begin, but we'll start with this. Now, this is a story I don't think is going to have a whole lot of throw, but it is interesting nonetheless, because I think it's got it's a signaling thing. And the president today, he pardoned somebody, a name from the political past,
absolutely.
Scooter Libby. Mm-hmm. That is not an appropriate name for an adult.
Is it his real name?
Scott, but he's called Scott. Okay. Scooter. I don't think that Dr. and Mrs. Libby named their young son Scooter, but I don't know. Anyway, the point is that Scooter got pardoned, and you'll remember that he was convicted of releasing the name of a CIA operative, Valerie Plame.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it later came out that he was probably not the leaker of that. There was another person that was probably the leaker of that. And he was actually acquitted, acquitted, not pardoned, but acquitted.
Commuted his sentence, yeah.
His sentence was commuted. And then he was eventually reinstated as a member of the bar in good standing.
Wow.
Because he's an attorney as well.
I don't remember all that.
So that's kind of a big deal. Yeah. So then this happens. And then Valerie Plame's husband, Joe Wilson, who is the former ambassador, calls in to MSNBC and talks to Katie Turr.
You can get away with anything. You want to betray your country? That's fine, because Trump will pardon you if it suits his venal political interests. He is a vile and despicable individual who is undermining the democracy of our country and whose administration is a rank repudiation of everything that my generation, since the end of the Second World War, has tried to put into place to ensure global stability.
So then Katie Turr asked him, well, now that some of the Bush-era neoconservatives, neocons, as they were called, both they accepted it and also it was a term of derision, have surrounded the White House in terms of foreign policy. When you've got Michael Bolton, that's the guy who sings, right? Isn't that Michael Bolton?
We could use some Michael Bolton right about now.
Yes, Ambassador Bolton, John Bolton is the guy who looks like Homer Simpson's dead neighbor.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Oh gee.
Right. Anyway, well, now that there are neoconservatives that surround Donald Trump, could we see more invasion and Iraq war style things come out of this White House? And I got to tell you, this Ambassador Wilson, well, listen to this.
I don't think he actually has a mind. I think he basically is very venal. He's looking to get himself through to the next day and put as many dollars into his bank account as he possibly can. I think this man is a danger to the United States of America.
No.
He drops the F-bomb right there on the MSNBC.
Gee.
He can spin a good tale, that Joe Wills. Kind of sounds like Aaron Sorkin was writing his dialogue there.
You saw
this venal sycophant of a man.
This is interesting because there is this other narrative that he's just in this to steal everything he can and then get out. Well, I don't know that I believe that, but I'll say if that were to be on the slight chance, a 15% chance that that's true, he just lost his bag man in Michael Cohen. So that won't
sure
be happening.
Did. Former U.S. Attorney Pat Fitzgerald, who doesn't weigh in on much, did jump into this because, remember, he was the special counsel in the Scooter Libby situation to convict him, said that it is had a statement out. It's false for Trump to claim Libby was convicted due to inaccurate testimony caused by the prosecution. So he's pushing back on.
And let us also remember who appointed that special counsel. Do we know who actually was the person who set that whole case up?
James Comey.
James Comey.
Wow.
That is correct.
There you go.
Oh. Excuse
me.
What was that?
I don't know. But it freaked me out, man. What I meant was this. That's what I meant.
Thank you.
Instead, I got like some sort of a dog going through a grinder.
What was happening? It didn't sound good at all.
No,
just watch this video and you'll never eat meat again.
Too late.
Good Lord.
All right. Checking in at
number four.
Good Morning America previewed George Stephanopoulos' interview with James Comey. Oh, speaking of James Comey, the two talked about the salacious allegations against Donald Trump and that controversial dossier.
How graphic did you get?
I think as graphic as I needed to be. I started to tell him about the allegation was that he had been involved with prostitutes in a hotel in Moscow in 2013 during a visit for the Miss Universe pageant, and that the Russians had filmed the episode, and he interrupted very defensively and started talking about it. You know, do I look like a guy who needs hookers? And I assumed he was asking that rhetorically. I didn't answer that, and then I just moved on and explained, sir, I'm not saying that we credit this. I'm not saying we believe it. We just thought it very important that you know.
Okay. Well, you can see how that. You can see exactly. This is the genesis story of the outrage. You can see exactly how the president got this because he's got Comey standing there going, "Listen, I'm not telling you this is true. I'm just telling you this is what's out there. This was part of the opposition research against you that was not used clearly, and that you know the Russians claim there are people inside Russia, which is where Christopher Steele got this." They claim that they got a video of you in a hotel room with these hookers, and they're doing something on the bed.
Oh, my God. It's the jellyfish sting, right? That's how you sterilize it?
Well, all right. So, wait. There's a little bit more meat on this bone.
Oh, gosh.
Says he may want me to investigate it to prove that it didn't happen. And then he says something that distracted me because he said, you know, if there's even a 1% chance my wife thinks that's true, that's terrible. And I remember thinking, how could your wife think there's a 1% chance you were with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow? I'm a flawed human being, but there's literally zero chance that my wife would think that was true. So what kind of marriage to what kind of man does your wife think there's only a 99% chance you didn't do that?
Wow.
I think that's pretty high.
I think we all 99%. Know. I think we all see him. I think that's pretty, you know, Director Comey, with all due respect, it's self-evident that he's a guy that you go, anything could be possible with him.
It's like when he says, do I look like the kind of guy who would need prostitutes? He may never have done it, but he looks, in the entire history of the universe, he looks more like that guy than anybody else ever has as the kind of guy who would buy a woman.
Yeah.
His whole gold-plated life
right.
leads to that.
Yeah. No, you know, no, sir, you actually do.
I said to him, sir, when he started talking about it, I may order you to investigate that. I said, sir, that's up to you, but you'd want to be careful about that because it might create a narrative that we're investigating you personally. And second, it's very difficult to prove something didn't happen.
Did you believe his denial?
Honestly, never thought these words would come out of my mouth, but I don't know whether the current president of the United States was with prostitutes peeing on each other in Moscow in 2013.
Oh,
it's possible, but I don't know.
Said the former head of the FBI.
I know. I don't
about the current really president of the United States.
Great point.
Yes.
I feel like this is one of those books that's going to get a ton of attention and sell a lot of copies, and no one's going to read all the way through. It has that feel, like the Hillary Clinton book that came out. That was 1,400,000 pages, million pages.
This is only 300 pages. It's doable.
Yeah. All right. Let me know when you're done with it, there, Sparky.
Yeah.
I'll give you the Spark Notes on.
Right. She's just going to go through and she's. just have her dog ear the pages where there's any kind of activity.
The good stuff.
Yeah, the good stuff.
That would
right?
be good.
Yeah.
Did they ever do is there a moment where Comey and George stood next together, next to each other, like side by side, and it looked like a P.T. Barnum sepia tone from 1888? Wouldn't that be great? They're both men. How could it be? Amazing Comey and little George.
The White House has responded.
The American people see right through the blatant lies of a self-admitted leaker. This is nothing more than a poorly executed PR stunt by Comey to desperately rehabilitate his tattered reputation and enrich his own bank account by peddling a book that belongs in the bargain bin of the fixin' section instead of being remembered as a dedicated servant in the pursuit of justice. Like so many of his other colleagues at the FBI, Comey will be forever known as a disgraced partisan hack that broke his sacred trust with the President of the United States, the dedicated agents of the FBI, and the American people he vowed to faithfully serve. One of the president's greatest achievements will go down as firing Director James Comey.
I kind of see that going down in a different way.
Wow.
I kind of see this. I don't know that James Comey goes down great in history, but I sort of think that that will be seen as one of the acts that led to the end of the presidency.
Wow.
Gee.
All right. Well, we'll see. But but that was, I think you could tell, a prepared statement.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it was.
Isn't she sounding more and more like Kathy Bates in Misery with her line readings, too? I'll tell you what's wrong, Mr. Man. The government disavows this partisan hack who belongs in the fiction bin.
Oh, man. All right.
Oh, my.
Let us now find out from Kim Gordon what's happening at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom.
Get to know Joe starting April 23rd. Joe Donlin and Micah Mater on WGN TV News 5, 6, 9, and 10. All starting April 23rd.
Top 5 5 continues right here on The Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper is in the studio with us. And we have worked our way all the way to
number 3.
All-new athlete cast of Dancing with the Stars was announced this morning, and three Olympic figure skaters are among them, Adam Rippon, Mariah Nagasu, and Tanya Harding.
Oh.
What?
They just did a movie about her, didn't they?
Yeah, they sure did.
She's back.
Yeah, they sure did. Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
It seems like these three will be the ones that are the ones to beat this season, because figure skaters always tend to do well. Remember, because Yamaguchi was on there. Do you think Tanya Harding will do that thing like she did during her skating career, where she goes up to the judges and she puts her foot up on the desk to show them that her skate,
the lace is broken? Yes, I do.
And then gives them all, takes a picture of them all. Do you think that's going to happen?
Be a good
move. I think she wore a costume modeled on like her garish garb back in the day.
Oh, my God. Tanya, who is partnered with Sasha Farber.
Oh boy, careful, Sasha.
Discusses the challenges ahead.
I just want to bring to the table as much of what I am that I can, but it is completely different. Absolutely completely different.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is going to be on it as well.
Yeah, and he's dancing with Lindsay Arnold, who's tiny, like 5 feet maybe. So I don't know how do you dance in that scenario?
All right, so I would say the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, in this particular case, he's first one out.
You do think
yes.
so?
Yeah, I don't. 73, I think, Kareem.
Yeah.
He might have the charisma.
He loves reality TV. He writes columns about The Bachelor.
Very smart.
I mean, he finds it a fascinating like study.
Yes. He is an amazing writer. I mean, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, 100 years from now, people will be reading him about what life was like at this era in the world. Yeah. And it's pretty interesting. It's funny, of all the people that, you know,
you would think, right?
Of all the people who do this for a living and they're like, this is what we're going to do. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is a fascinating perspective.
Yeah. He does. Yeah. He's an amazing writer.
And he should stay off this show, but that's a separate issue.
That's crazy.
Number 2.
What does that yodeling Walmart kid have in common with Beyonce? They are both playing Coachella, according to TMZ.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mason Ramsey is the 11-year-old, is poised to make his debut at the Star Pack Desert Fest this weekend. Hmm. The uniquely talented Illinois native takes the stage alongside DJ Wuhan, and may join Post Malone during the second set of shows next weekend. Hmm. This is the clip that made him famous.
Hmm.
Okay. Wow. I would just like to
sweet.
Say, yeah, I would just like to say, though, 30 years ago, that would have won a Grammy.
Oh my gosh.
There was like a, I think there was actually a category for that.
Now it's been mixed into an EDM track.
Oh, God.
No
all
way.
All the kids
I hear
playing.
Yodeling in a Walmart, and I expect to see Ronnie Cox in a banjo doing the theme from Deliverance next.
Okay.
He's got
Boris
something.
Gets down to that, that's for sure.
Yeah, where's Boris on this?
Wow. Boris will be bumping to that at Concrete Cowboy this weekend.
Yeah.
No, Boris sits at a corner table at Concrete Cowboy, and he just makes that noise when that song comes on. And he raises his glass up while all of the women who just left Boris's table to go to the dance floor because they heard that come on, and he just sits back there and then gets on his cell phone. Then the song ends, and then all the girls come back to his table. Is that about right? Do I have that about right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I bet he's... What is happening?
All right, checking in at...
Number one.
Meteorologist in Grand Rapids, Michigan, had an extremely entertaining on-air meltdown. One of his colleagues is like me, gets really mad when the cold weather forecast comes up. That's what I do with Skilling. I get it all, man. Mm-hmm. Right?
That's true.
So Gary Frank, the weatherman for WXML. I don't know what that would... that's a Fox affiliate up there.
Okay.
Noah Mitchell. went on a rant where he dragged the local news division for their reactions to the miserable weather ahead. What?
Could be worse. Has been worse. Well, because you guys are dragging me down. You guys keep... Well, every time I get done with the 7 day, you guys are like, oh, gosh. Oh. Every time. Doesn't matter what time I come on. 4:30, 5:30, 6:30. And then you expect me to be chipper for 5 straight hours. It's miserable. I want you guys to say, wow, that's great news. It's going to be 60 on Friday. Well, I mean, what do you want me to do? Lie to you? I'll put 70 every day next time. God.
Oh, just have the one microphone there so we
God.
Can... God! Right.
That's so Zuckerberg.
He did sound like Zuckerberg in the Senate. God! Leave me alone!
It's not my fault.
That's duh.
You know what? The early morning hours are getting to him. Is pretty much
you
my
get
guess.
That sense there that that was kind of part you know real that was real in some way. It started out kind of as a joke, and then he let out a little bit of his angst, a little too much.
It sounds like he's on one of those shows from 3 a.m. until 11 a.m. We've got your morning covered, Grand Rapids.
Seriously,
let's close this thing up.
The top five at five
to alcohol, the cause of and solution to. All of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer, one bourbon, one shot, one beer.
Tastes great. Makes women appear more attractive and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life, and I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it. I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, the yodeling rapper.
Yeah, Carnival Wagon is out. Boris is enjoying himself in the corner table. We're going to have just Boris. I think as a little bit of theater, I think we should have we should set up a corner table like there is one in a nightclub and have just Boris on Fridays sit there. with his sunglasses on,
wow,
and a drink in his hand, and an e-cig. It was my guess. He's also got that
got
going.
Got a jewel in his mouth.
Yeah. And he just waits for people to show up and for the action to start. I think that's, I like the way that
looks.
Let's
do it.
Hey, we have right now, got the Stefanis in house with us.
Yes.
Because Phil and Anthony Stefani, by the way, the Canarbo Wagon being brought to you by It's Just Lunch. Mm. The Stefanis, who know a little something about getting you fed.
They do.
Are here, and they've got, you know, they've got Bar Cargo and Mad Social and Riva, of course, one of the most storied restaurants in town out there on Navy Pier, and Castaways and so much more. But now you got Stefani Prime. Phil, you're going back to your roots here. You're
going back to my roots.
Yep.
Stefani Prime Italian.
Yep. Mm. So we go back to the original Stefani. I always talk to you about this. The original Stefani's on Fullerton, which to me was the greatest, one of the greatest Italian restaurants this town has ever seen. Mm. So that was, you know, one of those event kind of spaces. You went for your birthday. You went for your, you know, you went, that's the sort of place, one of those kinds of restaurants. And you're doing this now in Lincolnwood at Cicero and Pratt.
Correct.
Yeah, what goes on there? What's happening there?
So my concern was what happens if they take away the keys to the car? So I only have 4 blocks to walk home.
Okay.
Perfect.
I knew that. You know what?
There's always a purpose and a reason.
Because I saw that you were doing this. I'm thinking, he's out there for a reason, and I don't know what it is. But that would be it. That's it. All right. And so you're doing, you brought in stuff. You got the big charcuterie plate. Mm. You got a tomahawk chop here, which is literally, it's like on the opening credit sequence of the Flintstones when they put the big thing
with the big bone
on the side of Fred's car and it falls over. I mean, this is like old school.
Yes, the so as you recall, back in 1980, with Saturday, as a matter of fact, 38 years ago last Saturday, we opened up Stefani's on Fullerton, of which you know you frequented. So we decided to do this one in Lincolnwood, which is a great in-between spot between the North Shore and downtown. So it'll be a great meeting place,
right?
Where people say...
From the city and the suburbs, they meet there.
Right,
together.
I don't want to drive that extra hour, you know, down to Tavern on Rush, you know, so let's cut
time
it
time that could be spent on eating meat.
Right. And let's save
being
that,
in the car.
Let's save that babysitting time. You know, we have 1 hour there, 1 hour back, and obviously the valet is free, so compared to downtown prices. So
you got the big bar going there, too, I'm assuming.
Yes, we have a big square bar, and we have a dine-in bar, so you can eat full menu in the bar and plus in the regular restaurant.
That Lincolnwood surprises you, but there are a lot of good restaurants over there. Mm-hmm. My mom, you know, I grew up not too far from Rogers Park, and my mom and I will go and find a little spot there. Ah. And it just feels right. Like you say, no hassle. You pull in, you can park most places, and get a great meal.
Right. Catch yourself a nice parking lot over there?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
So we have valet parking, complimentary.
There you go. Mm. See, I don't get that in the city.
That's not available anywhere in the city.
I like what you're doing here. I guess, well, that's true. I mean, the Northwest side, and that there's so much property. If you drive around the city now, you drive especially around the Northwest side.
Mm-hmm.
People who, you know, used to live in Lincoln Park, or they, you know, now they moved out there. There's beautiful homes. There's all the way up to Lincolnwood and Sauganash and that whole area. That's a perfect place to be.
It's always the flip. You know, the people who live in the suburbs move down to the city. And we recall that back in the 80s at Fullerton, where, you know, the kids then became, you know, got married and moved out to the suburbs. The parents now came down to the city.
Right.
They flipped.
Mm. Yeah. So, well, you know, it's an interesting thing, too. Well, your old Fullerton spot, and this is the last time we'll reference this because I get wistful every time we talk about it. But that's like high-end condos or something now, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like, that's what goes on. You know, it goes from a great Italian restaurant. I want to go ring the doorbells of all the people who are living there and go, do you know what was in this space? Do you know? All right. So we've got, Anthony, why don't you tell us about the drinks? You're in charge.
Well, we have a traditional Negroni, and then we figured with springtime coming around, we'd get you some refreshing drinks. So the Negroni, and then we have our Aperol Spritz and a rosé. So Yeah, some traditional
rosé
Italian,
all day, right?
Yeah,
that's exactly, the whole point
exactly,
of the rosé.
So.
I'm sure at Bar Cargo you're doing a little bit of rosé all day.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's definitely a popular one. Yeah.
Bar Cargo is a place on Wells that these guys own, which is where I just, you know, the whole alpha to omega happens here with the Stefanis. You move downtown. Either you're out of, you got out of college or school or whatever, you're starting your first job, you move downtown, you go to Bar Cargo, you have rosé all day, you meet the guy or the girl of your dreams, and then you get married, and then you move, you maybe have the wedding at Riva, and then you move out to then you have some kids, like you stay downtown, you go to some of your places downtown, and then you move out to the suburbs, and then you go to Stefani Prime.
Yeah, boom, okay. You're in Lincolnwood.
Right. Exactly. That's how this goes. It takes you all the way through. I see, cradle there to grave, go. Basically, yeah. Is what you people
wow.
do.
Yeah.
Feeding generations.
Yeah.
And we have the whole family working there, by the way. So everybody's taking a turn because the name Stefani's on the sign. Mm-hmm. So I have my turn. Anthony has his. Gina's there also, and Karen's there.
What's everybody good at, Phil? Because did you train them in everything? Did they learn everything from you?
You know what?
Your experience?
Think that in our business, it's learning and process. So we always continue to learn, right? Mm-hmm. We ever get to the point that we know too much, it's over. So
don't I know it? Yeah. It's been over for years for me. You know, I forgot. No, they get married after they've met already at your place. Then they go over to Mad Social in the West Loop.
Yes.
They live in the building above Mad Social.
That's
when they're young, they have their first baby, and then they have to move
time to
Lincolnwood.
Go.
I got
to Lincolnwood.
It's like one of those insurance commercials where they play Kobe Calais music and you tear up at the end. You see the entire family journey. In
right, with the
seconds.
Same young actors, and they just put they just gray their hair out.
He's
and they're
like, that's all. Oh, it's over already.
Now they're at Stefani Prime. Oh,
all right, you got and you know what you're also doing here? And I don't know why. I wanted to ask you about this for years. The original Chicken Vesuvio, which I thought was the best
city,
at the original Stefani's.
The best.
You brought that back here. See, the original revenue recipe?
Yes.
And the original revenue, too?
Well, hopefully.
Wow. Now that, because I think that's the first place I had Chicken Vesuvio, and I went, oh my God, is this
so
what
good.
This is? This is, yeah.
And our fried calamari, which really put us on the map, is there also. So.
Wow. And what is this? You got the fettuccine alfano mixed in a Parmesan wheel. What is that?
Yeah. So we have... We actually used to do this at our restaurant, Lino's, which used to be in Ontario, where it's a giant Parmesan wheel, and then we'll bring out the fettuccine, and we'll mix it, and you kind of get the cheese that absorbs in the fettuccine there. So
oh,
it
God.
Really, yeah, brings out all the flavors.
You can
yeah.
take that to state fairs. Wheel of Parmesan.
Wheel.
Oh, my God, how crazy.
So that's a nice table
that's
side.
You have done it.
Yeah, look at this menu. Seafood Chopino, one of my favorites. And you got the seafood towers as well, which are hard to find.
How big is the martini?
The martini is a pretty big glass.
Yeah, I just want to know. I'm sorry. I think that's a reasonable question, Phil.
No. The martini's a pretty good glass.
You got that big
7-ounce pour in there, too.
Oh, geez. Swimming pool.
But
you got the swimming pool.
The glass is
7-ouncer.
The glass is
sometimes,
larger than most,
yes,
so we do get, you know, people don't know that we're pouring the same amount still, but it's just a larger glass.
We're trying to give
glass.
It a little bit of space on the top.
So it doesn't spill.
Idea.
I hate that when they're right up to the top.
So people say, you didn't fill my glass. Well, that's like 9, 10 ounces more than that.
I'll tell you, though, you can fill it right to the brim, and all of a sudden, Roe turns into one of the flying Willendas. He does not spill a drop. He could go on a tightrope across the river and not spill a drop.
I want to explain the importance, and again, this is you can only get this at this kind of a restaurant, and Stefani's are great at this. The skim ice on the top of the martini. You ask the guy to extra shake it so when it comes out, it's got sort of the mushy ice right on the top.
I love that. Martini slushy.
You got to get to that in the first, 40 seconds, 50 seconds before it
and
starts
then
to
gone.
Go. But it is the bet with the just a little dirty with that and the whole thing.
Blue cheese olives?
Yep. Yeah.
Would you say martini slushy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was Stormy Daniels' name before she was Stormy Daniels. I remember that. Wonderful dancer.
She really was. You know, she almost was a classically trained ballet artist,
sure,
but
sure.
That didn't work out for her.
Of course she was.
All right, Stefani Prime. Do not miss this. This is old school. And Oso Buco, too. Oh, you got your Oso Buco. Oso Buco was amazing.
Yeah.
That was one of those things. The menu, I literally could go through the menu for the original Stefani's, like, item by item right now with you. And you have most of it on here.
We try to put all the key ones on there that people remember, you know, through the years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we brought in this fresh fish component, which we do at Riva. And
got the Dover sole, great Dover sole there.
Yep.
Yes. We have one of the original Stefani menus there.
Do you?
Prices have changed a little bit.
Oh, gosh.
But,
yeah, I remember the steaks were like $7.95. That tells you how old I am.
Whip inflation now, the button.
Well,
President Ford says.
What people don't realize, my real estate taxes was $1,000 a year.
Totally different.
A year.
Yeah, that. You know
on
what?
On a three-story brownstone.
Hey, easy. Easy, Phil. We don't want to talk about that. You know what I'm saying? You hear me? All right. We got Stefani Prime, which is at 6755 North Cicero in Lincolnwood. That is an old school joint right there.
Yeah.
And that's, you know what's so amazing? I mean, this city's great with restaurants. Amazingly great concepts. But that old school Italian steakhouse is hard to find. It's hard to replicate, and there's you know, a handful of guys alive who could do it, and Phil, you're one of them. So, and Anthony, thank you for following
Thanks,
in the tradition.
Guys.
Yeah. So,
Stefani's are great.
Thank you.
All right, we've got right now Kim Gordon telling us what's coming up at the top of the hour in the WGN newsroom. That is the music of Tyler Sjostrom.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be with us for Live Music Friday coming up in just a few minutes.
Powerful voice, too. Beautiful.
Yeah. We never go wrong here. We've got the best. We got the best musical bookers since Letterman.
I think you're right.
Right? I mean, that's
so
we're
much talent.
We've got. You're gonna love what you're gonna hear coming up here from Tyler Sjostrom, and Tyler is going to be. Explain. He and Christy Hayes are going to be part of the Americana concert series at Haymarket Pub, which we have been talking about now for the last couple of weeks, which is really amazing, amazing, amazing stuff. That's May 3rd. And so yeah, we like to plan ahead for this. May 3rd at the Haymarket Pub. All right. Which, by the way, May 3rd seems like it's a really far way away based on the weather. But it's not.
It's around the corner.
It's right around the corner.
3 weeks to the from now.
Yeah. Right? It's a ridiculous thing. All right. You know what? Before we do, Richard Roper telling us what he thinks is the best movie of the year so far.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do this for you.
Okay.
I have a pair of tickets in my hand. See, you never know what's going to happen here. That's why you should listen all the time, because you never know. A pair of tickets to the Sistine Chapel Choir, first ever performance in Chicago. Oh. You know, like all those movies where Tom Hanks is running through the back end and he can't figure out what's going on, and then you hear the angelic voices of the Sistine Choir Chapel trying to make you feel better about the fact that he's, you know, about to unveil a secret about something horrible. If you want to see them, they are going to be the Airy Crown Theater on July 21st. That is definitely, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Mm-hmm. 19th caller right now, 312-981-7200, to win a pair of tickets to the Sistine Chapel Choir's first ever performance in Chicago. That's the Pope's Choir right there.
How cool.
Amazing.
No big deal.
No, it is a very big deal.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you imitate the Pope? Is that okay?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. Well,
why not?
Remember when the Beeb said he wanted to see the 16th Chapel?
Uh-huh.
These guys are even better than that.
Better than the 16th?
Remember? Better than the 16th Chapel, yeah.
Am I going to send them to you anyway?
My goodness.
But you send them right back, because I do not the rest of what are you doing.
All right. There you go. I don't know if that was actually the Pope or Bruno Abate, but it was one of them.
It doesn't sound like your friend Bruno. But
yeah, get tickets starting today at Ticketmaster.com, by the way, if you want to attend that. Well, right now, like, someone's already won it. It is just, the phones exploded with that.
I told you.
Oh, jeez.
All right. What is the best movie of the year so far, Richard Roper?
Yeah, and we've had a really good year, as you've mentioned several times over the last couple of months. It's been a really strong year for movies. Of course, we had groundbreaking Black Panther and Ready Player One and some other really strong films. But there's a movie coming out this weekend that I really hope people will check out in the theaters. It's called Lean on Pete.
Oh.
And it,
you may, if you see the ads, you might go, this must be like one of those movies from the 60s from, you know, Technicolor Disney about a boy and his horse. Because you see, Pete is a horse in the movie, okay? But it's so much more than that as a film. So here's the basic setup. There's a young actor by the name of Charlie Plummer who played John Paul Getty III in All the Money in the World, the kidnapped heir, who was great in that movie. And now he's 18 years old. In this movie, he plays a 15, 16-year-old kid. And I think this kid, Charlie Plummer, is going to be an actor to watch for years to come. He gives a brilliant performance here. He moves with his father to Portland. His mom's long out of the picture, and his dad's kind of one of those guys that gets by on charm and good looks, but often gets into trouble. And through a variety of circumstances, the kid ends up on his own. And it's between his freshman and sophomore years in high school. He's transferred, so he doesn't know anybody anywhere near the area. And he happens upon kind of a broken down third tier racetrack. And Steve Buscemi plays an aging trainer who hires him, you know, as a stable boy, right?
Year.
Yeah, and he's amazing. And maybe Ro can explain this, because the horses that Steve Buscemi's training here are quarter horses.
Okay, yeah.
So they're sprinters,
I've lost
right?
money on those, yeah. too, yeah. Yeah.
So those are the ones that just, you know, the fast race where they just go, what, a quarter right. mile or
they're
less,
big,
right?
They're big horses that, you know, the kind of horses you have on a farm. They're not thoroughbreds. They're not right. part of this, that kind of a bloodline expertise. These are just big, brooding sprinter cars. It's kind of the funny car series of horse racing. Yeah.
So, and Buscemi, you know, you think at first, is he going to be the kindly father figure? And he kind of takes an interest in the kid, but no, he's been through a lot. And this is also the very low end of that circuit. I mean, we're talking about rundown tracks or even like county fairgrounds, yeah. or sometimes it just looks like someone took a plow to the back of a farm and 300 people showed up to bet on it, right? So Pete is a horse near the end of his run, and the kid takes a real liking to him, despite Steve Buscemi, the trainer, and then Chloe Sevigny plays a veteran jockey, and they both keep telling him, these are not pets. These are commodities, and once they've run their course and they cost this guy, Buscemi's guy, money, he sends them to Mexico, and they don't come back. Let's just put it that way, where there are places. So here's a setup. So you hear the voices here. You'll hear Charlie Plummer as the young kid, and then Chloe Sevigny as the jockey, and Steve Buscemi as the trainer.
Look, if we're going to be working together, you got to get some manners. And you got to chew your food. What does your mom say?
I don't know. I don't know her.
Well, does your dad have any manners?
I don't know. I guess I haven't really noticed.
You going to be okay on your own today?
Yeah.
Did your mom leave you or something?
Yeah.
Reaching out to find you. Hey, Pete. How you doing? Put it all
behind you. Can't get attached to the horse.
Why not?
They're here to race and nothing else.
Ooh. So, and this is not giving too much away. I mean, there's the journey, but there comes a moment where the kid, realizes that because Pete loses once again, and it's got an injury, and he realizes that Pete's going to be put in a trailer and driven to Mexico, and that's going to be the end of the horse. And he decides to do something about it.
To live on a farm?
To live on a farm, Violetta.
That's right, Violetta.
For
to
all
live
his
on a farm.
Days, where he'll just be happy.
Frolicking.
And he'll have a hat, and they'll cut out little holes for his ears, and he'll just have the greatest time ever.
Okay,
not quite.
That's what I thought, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes this travelogue, where you've got a kid who's fallen through the cracks completely because he's basically homeless. He's a teenager, and as we see in this city and everywhere else, kids like that, it's not like everybody's out there looking for him, and he's trying to find one person who maybe can salvage his life, and he's got this horse, and he goes on this odyssey that's more like the Grapes of Wrath than any kind of Disney movie, where some really dark and sad and also very uplifting things happen, and you do really come to love the boy, and you really come to love Pete. Aww. And that's all I'm going to say about what happens from that point forward, but it's an incredible journey. Yes,
we'll all be crying at the
well
end.
And you can't help but root for this kid. All he wants, he's got one great scene where he talks about the one time when he was at his other school and a kid from a normal family invited him over for dinner, and they're all laughing and having a great time at the dinner table. And he goes, that family probably doesn't even remember me. That was 3 years ago, but I think about them every night. And so you ache for this kid to have. He's 15 years old. He's going into his sophomore year, if he ever goes back to school. Right. And he's found something in this horse. He wants to protect this horse because he wants someone to care about him as much as he cares about the horse.
Oh.
And,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Pete. Oh, God. Pete's so great. Best horse ever.
The best words in a movie.
Jeez.
If they only had a category for that.
Yeah, they should get some awards.
Oh, and you're just
that.
Like, oh, and the kid.
Does he seem human, the horse?
No, it's, you know, it's very, that's the thing about this. It's very realistic, and you know what I mean, and gritty, mm-hmm. and not always good things happen. And sometimes the kid does some things that aren't so great because he doesn't know what else to do. There's some violent moments. There's some desperate moments. Mm. But and it's beautifully filmed. It looks like one of those great Terrence Malick films.
Who did that? Oh, wow.
You know, like the great cinematography and the, you know, but you know, it's just it's fantastic. It's really fascinating to watch. Here's a kid who's about to be 16 years old, walking through America basically with a horse, and he's still invisible because that's the kind of world, especially, you know, he's going through the Northwest and kind of, you know, a lot of open territory. So it's not like he's getting pulled over by the police all the time. You're like, oh, guy's walking his horse, I guess. I don't know. And he's got no money. So that's another concern. You know, how does he get money? Well, you know, he has to resort to certain things. So it's really got a lot of elements that make it much richer and deeper than a story about a boy and his horse.
Who's behind the movie? Who's the director and the writers and all that?
The director's name.
So this is basically a first effort. Or first major effort.
Andrew Haig is the writer and director, and I know he's done a couple of other good things. I think some TV stuff as well. A real, real talent. He did a movie called 45 Years and Weekend, but this is a different level. And I think that young Charlie Plummer deserves awards consideration, as do Steve Buscemi and Chloe Sevigny as for their supporting work. I hope the movie does well. It's one of those. It's either going to, you know, get lost in the shuffle. It's not a great title. You know, you lean on Pete, and you find Pete's a horse, and people, I think, immediately do think this is going to be a G-rated, Beauty or Black Beauty kind of thing, which is a great movie, but it's not. It's a lot more than it. Don't take the little ones to see it, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. It's for grown-ups.
It's interesting. You mentioned Steve Buscemi. He's menacing in everything he does, no matter what.
Good.
Even when he's trying to play, a warm character, you're still afraid he's going to kill you.
And he's got, he's always funny too. In Fargo, he's funny in everything. Even like, and you heard a little clip of that when he watches this kid, because he doesn't have any kids, and he just watches this kid eat a burger and fries. Imagine a hungry teenager who hasn't eaten in a while, and he just can't believe the manners of this kid. And the kid's just eating like a kid does.
That's awesome.
Yeah, four stars.
Four
obviously.
Stars.
Yeah.
Ooh.
All right. Lean on Pete, and that's everywhere where five movies.
Yeah, it's playing in the theaters and. You know, look, The Rock will be fine if you don't go see his movie, because first of all, it's just absolute garbage.
Save it.
Okay.
We're going to go back.
We're going to talk a little bit more?
We're going to run on the other side. We're going to run through the movies that you should and you should not see. And obviously, Lean on Pete, if you have an opportunity to go see it this weekend, that would be your first choice?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. All right. But whether you should go see The Rock, I think you just gave it away, but whether you should see that.
It might have been a French term for a classic I was using.
Or you could go see Don Draper. He's in a new movie.
Beirut.
John Hamm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we'll stay right here. We'll tell you all about that. But first, Kim, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom? Tyler Shostrom is in the studio with us. Wait till you hear this. I say this every week, but I mean it more every week than I meant it the week before.
Wait till you hear his voice. Wow.
So that's all coming your way right here on 720 WGN. Nice. All right, Richard Roper is just telling us about the best movie of the year so far. Is a this is not like a Cameron Crowe movie playing in the background.
He's that. I was thinking the same thing. It's like it was like nice background for
sort
the
Tyler
for Lean on Pete. Actually,
Tyler needs a good Cameron Crowe movie to do that interstitial music in. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a good thing. I'm going to call Cam right now and ask him if it's okay. Yeah. All right, you said Lean on Pete, best movie of the year so far.
Yes, please. Go see Lean on Pete. You won't. I can't imagine you'll be disappointed. I if you love good, smart, warm and unique films. This is that and more.
Are there surprises? A lot of surprises?
Yes.
Yes, okay. All right.
Yeah, I think the first surprise is you find out that Pete's a horse. I think that's the first surprise. Yeah.
Don't
let that stop you because it has greatness behind it.
Okay, bring the Kleenex though. I get teary eyed just hearing the story.
Stay in your seat during the credits, kind of, get yourself together.
Yeah, I know that. I know that. I've done that. I've had that feeling. I've had that moment. Mm-hmm. All right.
You gotta act like a man! Don Corleone, Godfather.
Don't bring the lights up just yet. I'm not ready.
I'm good.
Godfather, I'm perfect for this part. If I could just get the studio.
I'm good. I did that at Rampage. Because that was $13 I wasn't going to get back. All right, let's talk about Rampage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We reviewed this yesterday. You reviewed this yesterday. But let's If people want to go see The Rock in this movie, should they wait a month till the next Rock movie comes out?
Yeah, there is one coming out. And it's now to the point where his movies just describe what's the entire movie. So this one's called Rampage because that's what the animals do. The giant, you know, freakishly injected with crazy chemicals animals go on a rampage. And next month he's in Skyscraper. and the poster shows him leaping between two skyscrapers. And if you look at the poster, it's one of the most fascinating posters I've ever seen for Skyscraper, because if it had anything to do with the actual laws of physics and gravity, he would die from the poster, because he's about 30 feet out from one building and about 70 feet away from the next. So unless there's a really big net at the bottom of those two skyscrapers. So Rampage, he plays a guy who works at the San Diego Wildlife Sanctuary, and he befriends an albino ape named George. And it says a lot about this movie that I can remember the ape's name, and I can't remember the character's name of any of the humans. he plays, I don't know, Dwayne, I don't know. But Mr. Akoya, they call him, or something. And then a mysterious chemical falls to Earth from a space station that exploded. And here's the thing, there's three canisters of this magical, you know, test serum. And the three canisters are discovered by George the Ape, a crocodile in Florida, and a wolf in the Northwest. Why couldn't people have found it? And all three of them get, you know, infected by the serum and immediately grow to sizes of like 10 times the size of normal animals. And they get those, the same teeth that every monster in every movie and every alien has, you know, like the five rows of teeth, and then one tongue comes out, and then another tongue comes out from that tongue.
Oh. Yeah.
And then they just start eating everybody. But fortunately, before Dwayne Johnson became a primatologist specializing in the study of the great apes,
yeah,
he was in Special Forces, as the movie informs
us. Oh, thank God.
So he's able to...
what were the chances?
He beats up the wolf, he beats up the crocodile, he beats up an airplane.
Can you do that in Special Forces?
He beats up a small missile.
This is the Donald Trump Special Forces.
Yeah, where it's amazing.
These are the school teachers with the guns.
He gets shot and says to no big deal, I'm pretty sure it missed any vital organs, and then just keeps, like, doesn't even limp. Like, they usually limp if they've been shot in the gut, or they you get the close-up of the red spreading on their white t-shirt. He just goes, I don't think it hit anything.
Moving
on. Threw him.
They wrote this in. I still got to take the shot, but we're going to go. But the action continues.
It's astonishingly bad, even for a fun escapist Rock movie.
Okay, so it's one. That's one star.
Yeah.
But you did like
Beirut.
Movie with John Hamm.
Yeah.
Plays an alcoholic.
Yeah, and it's set in early 80s Beirut, and you know, the whole city's being torn apart. And every time there's an act of violence, there's about 10 different groups, factions, or countries that could be responsible for it. And in the middle of all this, he plays this broken-down alcoholic former diplomat who is summoned back to Lebanon 10 years later to help perhaps arrange for the rescue of his former best friend, a CIA operative who's been kidnapped by terrorists. So it's a lot of negotiations. It's got that really gritty, sand-soaked feel. Everybody looks like they're really there. You know what I mean? Like, it's not one of those things where everybody's pretty. Everybody's sweat-soaked and the bars look seedy and you drink just to get through the day. And it's almost like kind of a modern-day Casablanca, where you have some romance and intrigue set against the backdrop of a big-picture war. I really thought it was an excellent film. Great performance by John Hamm, who's really, I think, carving out quite a career. He really is carving out quite a career as more than just a classic leading man.
Right, right. Well, because he's shown some range as a comic actor, as obviously as this stoic in Mad Men, which goes down as one of the great, just as in terms of television series, something that washes over you visually, probably better than almost any period piece ever does. Every shot was perfectly framed, and there wasn't a false note in anything from the little tchotchkes on the desk to what Manhattan looked like at that time, or what, you know, the Rye, New York looked like, or any of those places. So it's really something.
Yeah, and one of the great things about this film is, by either coincidence of casting or whatever, it features actors from three of the seminal television series of this century, because you've got John Hamm for Mad Men, Shea Whigham, who was Boardwalk Empire, who played Steve Buscemi's brother. We were just talking about Steve Buscemi's brother. And Dean Norris, who was Hank in Breaking Bad, are all in this movie, playing very different characters and showing their range.
All right. Great cast. It's the golden age of narrative cinema.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you so much, Richard Roper. We got the live music coming your way. Tyler Sjostrom is here. You're not going to want to miss a minute of this either. But first, we've got Kim's News in 2 minutes.
One hand on the wheel, I am driving through desert land. Oh, those Joshua trees, they were holding you, they were holding me. Damn that
you hate her. I'm not sure that I'm gonna make it. Can you hand me a blanket?
That is Tyler Sjostrom.
Yeah.
That is Amboy Crater from his album Bones Hold Me Up. And that is our EP, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get an EP and an LP. I just, you know, it's there's too many P's. And that's exactly what Donald Trump told the FBI.
Here we go.
The
album was right back there.
Oh,
you know, amazing.
Comey's going to talk about that on Sunday.
What did I do? All right.
My goodness.
I'm sorry, Tyler. I'm sorry I had to be here for this part. All right. Now, this, you know, local boy makes good story. Tyler, you're from the western suburbs, right?
Correct.
All right. Yeah. And how long have you been in the music business?
Oh, I don't know about business. I've been playing music to people for the last 4 years now.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah. Very yelling cool. at them. They seem to like it for some reason.
That's yeah. very good. That's the most yeah. important part yes. of this, is that they seem to be responding to you. And as we've you know, we've heard from you for the last few minutes as you've been playing for us, coming in and out of the commercial breaks.
Spectacular.
Amazing stuff. Thank and you. So who inspires you?
Oh, man, the list is very long. But as far as direct influences, I would say Nathaniel Rateliff. He does the Night Sweats, which is a little bit more mm-hmm. popular, but his solo stuff, very raw, very, like, you can tell he's going through some stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which is nice, you know, yeah. to know that. Yeah. And then mm-hmm. David Ramirez, he's out of Austin. So, like, Americana guys, yeah.
You don't come from a musical family, but how did you get started in music? What was that?
Probably going to church. It's like the one place everyone's allowed to sing, even if you're terrible, you know? So it's just true. Like, you kind of find out if you're good enough, you're like, all right, this person, there's something my ear's special. Bleeding, so I should stand away from this person, but this person sounds yeah. gorgeous. So I think that's probably where it took off at first.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I hear a little bit of Eddie Vedder angst and anger in what you're doing there.
I'll take that.
Yeah,
definitely.
That's
take
a good comparison.
Yeah. So it's, all right, so now you got the, you got two records out. And you're touring the planet Earth. You're going to be at Haymarket, part of the Americana concert series, which is Thursday nights at Haymarket, which is in the West Loop. It's right there at Randolph and Halsted.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old Barney's. That's what I mean. You know, back you have to be 110 years old to know this.
Good Lord,
yes, sir.
It goes way back.
Right. I mean, there were like old man Mayor Daly would go in there and you know collect an envelope and then walk out. That's that. But now it's Haymarket and it's an amazingly they have a music room in the back. It's a great restaurant. But then you
big
go to the
space.
Back, gigantic, great space, its own bar,
brewery,
and it's both intimate and comfortable all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So
delicious food, delicious drink.
They do have some drank in there.
Yes.
I did notice some the last time I was there was some drinking going on there. And so I think that you're going to want to check this out. So you're going to be there Thursday, May 3rd, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
With Christy Hayes, right?
I think. Christy Hayes.
She sounds
don't ask me. That's, yes, I got it right here.
Christy,
yep. Christy Hayes. And then, and by the way, Tyler's music reached over 20 million streams on Spotify.
How about
by the
that?
Way. So congratulations on that.
Streams. Yeah. What was the what took off? Like,
well, you know what? That's the other side of my career, in quotes, is I'm a songwriter and like a featured artist on EDM music in Europe.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh, there you go.
So,
Oh.
So it's kind of the bane
smart
of
some
I'll bet you Violetta has tried to scream over you at some.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Hey, Mr. DJ.
Yeah. Or there's kind of, you know, she's tried talking to her girlfriend at a bar somewhere and then you're thumping in the background.
Definitely has happened before.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Congratulations to you on that. That's very fun.
Kind of slightly cool different genre from
just
what you're playing here.
Yeah.
Now, how does an EDM guy go to this kind of soulful Americana troubadour thing?
You know, they pick and they scavenge from all the genres, and that's kind of like pop music. I think EDM, I was talking to Michael over here, who puts on the Haymarket series, about how EDM is kind of infiltrated pop music. You know, you'll see it's kind of the era of producers these days.
Right.
So you'll see Kygo is a producer featuring a pop artist. And so, you know, they grab from all sorts of genres because they want to sound unique. So they're like, you know, what hasn't been done before? Let's grab this guy who has a really low, screamy, raw voice that's yelling at people. Maybe this will turn somebody on to it. Yeah.
Wow. So you got the thumpity thump going.
Yeah, thumpity thump. Yeah.
Wow.
There's meaning behind that too, Ro.
Yes.
Just as Boris.
Yes, exactly. Right. If Boris could articulate it, well, maybe Boris's articulation is some sort of primal scream that we're not familiar with. Maybe that's what it is. There you go.
Could you use that in EDM music? That's
oh my god, for sure. You can use anything. Use a
car
crash.
I'm sure it's already been used. Let's be honest.
We should
have overused it.
Sound right there.
We should produce an EDM record with Boris in it and not pay him.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Tyler, why don't you get up and let's see? We're going to do "Holding On," right? And this is also from that "Bones Hold Me Up" EP.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get that, of course, where all fine music is sold on the internet. And all you got to do now, Tyler has a funny spelling for his last name.
Because Silent J.
The Silent J. And we're used to that here as the home of the Blackhawks. But if you might not be used to it in your spelling class, Tyler Sjostrom is S-J-O.
We should give him a nickname. A hockey nickname.
Yeah, what would it be?
S-J-O.
Schoser?
Schoser.
Schoes.
Stroms.
Stromser.
I know.
Sorry, Stromser.
Yeah, we'll change your name before you're done, Tyler, if you don't mind.
The Greatest Showman, S-J-O, though.
The Greatest Showman.
Oh.
Yeah. Just
take from...
Oh, he's Showman.
Destroyed,
I don't think I can remember that.
Yeah, that's too long. That's just shows.
Shows. Yeah. Okay, I like that.
All right.
Okay.
You ever play hockey, Tyler?
No.
No. Okay. No. You could start.
I usually get asked basketball because of how freakishly tall I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but none of it. All right, okay. Well, that's because you played hockey, you'd have to have a head injury. So, because that's exactly what happens with these guys. They can't remember things because they got head injuries. I think that's what we learned. All right, Tyler, take it away.
Holding on, I am holding on, holding on for you, holding on for you, keeping on, I am keeping on for you, keeping on for you, but I don't wanna go numb. And that's exactly what I've done. I want to stay young, but I've grown old. I want to fly like in every dream, but then I die. Yeah. Holding on, I am holding on, holding on for you, holding on for you, keeping on, I am keeping on for you. I've been feeling so dumb. What the hell have I done? Going numb don't make you bold. I'd rather die than going on living a lie. Yeah. Yeah. All these monsters have their lines. All these tourist camera fine. My whole family's dying. And I've screwed up trying. Holding on. I am holding on. Holding on for you.
Tyler Sjostrom.
Nice.
You can see him May 3rd at the Americana Concert Series at Haymarket in Chicago. That is at Randolph and Halstead in Chicago. More with Tyler Sjostrom coming up right after we find out what's happening at the top of the hour in the news. Here's Rob Martier. Oh, that would be me. I believe. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be my turn right here. All right. Tyler Sjostrom is with us, and the show must go on, as we like to say here. He's got two records out right now. He's got Bones Hold Me Up, and then the full album is What We Say We Are, and we're actually going to he's going to play a tune for us from that. Go
nice.
On. It's Tyler Sjostrom, spelled Sjostrom, by the way. And after
common
you hear this,
spelling.
Exactly. So Tyler is going to be again at Haymarket in a couple of weeks. That's going to be Thursday, May 3rd. Do not miss this part of the Americana concert series. Take it away.
Thank you.
Red River, you stole my heart again. Red River, you stole my soul again. Set it in the soil, it's basking in the moon. A shiver, you warm the cliffs and stone. You deliver life to these dried up bones. Islands in the fog, they're basking in the moon. Your waters flow down the Gulf of Mexico, the Appalachian, through the whole dang southern nation. You take it slow, just enough to let the snow melt below the mountain. Stole my heart again. Red River, you stole my soul again. Set it in the soil, it's basking in the moon. Your waters flow down the Gulf of Mexico, the Appalachian, through the whole dang southern nation. You take it slow, just enough to let the snow melt below the mountain. Your waters flow Take it slow, just enough to let the snow melt below the mountain.
Thank you, thank you.